Teamwork is especially important, and there are all kinds of teams. I remember well as some of you plowing with a team of mules, how important it was to get those two mules working together and going at about the same pace in order to do the work that needed to be done. Back when I was a bit younger, if we could get five people together, we played basketball. If we got nine, we played baseball. If we got 11, we played football. Depending on how many we had together, depending on what kind of team we had. But all of us realized then, and we realize today, how important a team really is. We talk about political teams. There are teams that are involved with business endeavors. And usually a business endeavor is more successful if there is a good team. We even have teamwork in the community, and we could go on and on, but I'm here to tell you this morning that I'm convinced that the greatest team that we'll ever find, short of Christ and the church, is the team of the husband and the wife. The husband-wife team is so important. You look at it from any angle you want to consider. You think about all that's involved. And the husband-wife team is so important. It is appropriate that we think of this subject this morning because last evening we saw Trent and Valerie married. This afternoon it will be Reader and Mary. Friday night, Cindy and James. Saturday afternoon, Angie and Chris. It's not hard to recognize that this is the month of June, is it? And others of you, even some that are in the audience this morning that I see, have weddings planned later in the year. It is appropriate that we think about the husband-wife team and how important the husband-wife team really is. I want us to think about it this morning from the standpoint of the husband and wife sharing. We listened to a very important passage a moment ago from 1 Corinthians 7. Listen to another that is often read, especially for the wives, when we're thinking about the family and the home. 1 Peter 3, beginning at verse 1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they may also without the word be won by the conversation or the conduct of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of hair or wearing of gold or putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in the which is not corruptible even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. For some reason or other, we stop at that verse many times, especially those of us who are men who are dealing with it tend to stop at that verse. Many lessons have been taught from those first six verses about the influence of a godly woman and what she can do to win a husband and what she can do to help her family be what it ought to be. But this morning, I want us especially to look at verse 7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. I know of no place that a person could go to get a better sermon outline on the subject of husbands and wives sharing than 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Notice there in the verse that he says you are heirs together of the grace of life. In this life, there is a great sense in which the husband and wife are heirs together. And I would especially underscore that word together. Heirs together in the grace of life. We're living in a time when we hear so many things said to tend to downgrade the family. Whether it's Murphy Brown or Roseanne Barr or some of the others that we listen to on television, we hear comments made that the family is not going to be what it used to be. And there is really not the need for the husband-wife relationship and for the father and mother together in the rearing of children. Just a few days ago, I admit to you, and I started to say I was shocked, really not, I was concerned, after hearing the announcement about the Judd woman who sings. Never can remember which one's Winona and which one's the other one, but the daughter announced that she's now going to have a baby. She's not married, doesn't plan to be married, yet continues to be held up as a hero by so many. It's not uncommon to hear announcements like this, that not only after the fact, but even in planning for the fact, without the husband-wife relationship. And even as we look at religion in general today, again, we hear some who say we ought to place some kind of approval on living together without being married. And there's a lot of talk now about the relationship, the homosexual relationship of two men being recognized as partners and two women being recognized as partners, and even be able for one of them to have a child or to adopt a child. The trend that's taking place ought to scare us a bit, but God's word still stands firm. And when we look at passages like this, we begin to realize the true wonderful relationship, that husband-wife team that is so great, at least God thought it so great, that when he wanted to help us understand the relationship between Christ and the church, he helped us to think about the husband and the wife. And especially in Ephesians 5, through the Apostle Paul said, if you want to know how the relationship of Christ to the church is, think about the husband as the head of the family. And if you want to understand how the church is to be subject to Christ, you think about how the wife is to respect the husband. God realized that this sharing was a great sharing, that it was a great relationship. And here in 1 Peter 3:7, there are four ways in which he says the husband and the wife really share. Number one, he says, husband, dwell with your wife. Live with her. Physical sharing. There may be more intended in that word as it spreads out in the rest of the verse, but it at least includes that. And when you tie together that passage there in 1 Corinthians 7, that the wife's body belongs to the husband and the husband's body belongs to the wife, and they are to render that which is due, that which is right to each other in that complete relationship, you begin to see that God's word is not silent even concerning the physical sharing between a husband and his wife. And even if you go back to the Old Testament time in passages like Proverbs 5, where after in the first several verses the son was warned about giving up his honor and being involved with a strange woman, he then, about verses 19 through 21, is admonished to be satisfied and to enjoy the wife of his youth, his own wife, that complete physical sharing. You know, it's a little bit hard for us in our minds to get this in proper focus and realize that all of the complete physical sharing between two people who are not married is so ugly, and yet the same type of complete physical sharing between two people who are married is so beautiful. And that's not easy to bring together, really, in our thinking. I think that's one of the reasons that the honeymoon is so important, especially for young people who respect God's word concerning purity. Here's a young man and a young woman who have lived Christian lives, preparing themselves for that time that they will be married to each other. And up until that one point, the complete physical relationship is ugly and sinful, and then all of a sudden, immediately, everything that's been ugly becomes beautiful. And that's a traumatic point for those who respect themselves, each other, and God's will. But after marriage, with God's approval, the one who made us with appetites for love and companionship and gave us the proper outlet, after marriage there is that complete sharing, even physically speaking. But he says, dwell with them according to knowledge. Notice now the word knowledge. Not only is there a physical relationship, but there needs to be intellectual sharing according to knowledge. Everything cannot be based on emotions, desires, and feelings. He says that the husband and the wife, the two that are married together in this complete relationship, are now to dwell together in knowledge. Well, let me suggest to you that there's more than one idea involved in that word knowledge. First, it indicates that there needs to be a knowledge of God's pattern for the marriage, to where people understand and respect what God has said about a man becoming a husband and a woman becoming a wife, and about what He has said relative to who has the right to be married. We need to know God's plan and know who can be married with God's approval, so that this beautiful relationship is that and is not a sinful relationship. But it involves more than that. Let me suggest to you that the husband and wife dwelling together and sharing together in knowledge involves knowing a little bit about each other and maybe their background. Why do we encourage our young people to have a period of courtship, and parents encourage them to make that a long period of time? It at least includes the idea of getting to know the background, know that person. You don't go into business without knowing something about the person, and this marriage business is pretty important. Somebody said, I don't care who her father or mother or grandfather or grandmother were, I'm not marrying the family. Don't kid yourself. You're not only marrying the family at present, but you're marrying the family who's in that person you're marrying. Some knowledge of background. And then it goes further than that. There's a third idea, I believe, that's involved in this husband and wife sharing in knowledge, and that is know each other's thinking. And I'm still trying. Know each other's thinking. About the time I've determined that I have understood exactly what Judy's thinking, then somebody throws a monkey wrench in the situation. And I don't know that we'll ever arrive at perfection on that, but I need to know the thinking of my wife, and my wife needs to know my thinking. And I'm going to tell you something, you won't know that unless there's some communication. Oh, you ought to know what I'm thinking. Communication, communication, communication. You get every marriage counselor in Tennessee today to make a list of the five areas where we need to work to have better marriages, and I'll guarantee you that not one of them will get to number five without mentioning communication. Know each other. Share with each other in communication. Sharing together physically, sharing together intellectually. Dwell together in knowledge. Number three, giving honor to the wife. And I think you can sort of read between the lines in this entire passage and know that that applies in the other direction too. Live together and share giving honor. Does that not suggest emotional sharing? Emotional sharing? It may come in the form of saying, I love you. It may be the sending of a card or the giving of a card or a gift on a special occasion, and maybe more important, a card or a gift or some little something on an occasion that's not really supposed to be special. It means in some way building up and encouraging the emotional side. And most of us that are married realize how important that is. We've had those times when maybe we were down a bit, and just knowing that the wife or the husband was sitting there by our side, even if a word was not spoken, gave some emotional balance and support. And if there is any relationship where that verse, rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep, applies, it's in the husband-wife relationship. And sometimes we may be like the little boys and girls who cry with each other, and some of them don't know why they're crying. We may not understand the whole situation. But as long as we're ready to be emotionally involved, if my wife is hurting, I ought to hurt too. And if I am hurting, she ought to hurt too. If either of us is rejoicing about something, we ought to be able to enjoy sharing that moment of rejoicing, that moment of encouraging one another emotionally by telling, by giving, by a pat on the back, by just that smile or that little wink or that little look or whatever it is that becomes that telltale point between the husband and wife. There needs to be that emotional sharing. Too many of us may very well be like the situation where a husband and wife were having problems. They went to a counselor, and the counselor said to the wife, what's the problem? And she said, he never tells me that he loves me. And he said, I told her when we got married, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let her know. emotional sharing. And then the verse goes ahead after it says about being heirs together, and it says that your prayers be not hindered. Well, now, folks, there's something involved in that part of the section that goes a little bit beyond the other three points we've made. And that something is that there needs to be spiritual sharing. Physical sharing in the complete sense of the word. Intellectual sharing, know each other. Emotional sharing, encourage each other. And spiritual sharing, help each other toward heaven. That's the real husband and wife sharing. When you begin to look for a man to be qualified as an elder, you look at his wife also. When you begin to seek out someone to serve as they did in Acts 6, those we call deacons, you look at his wife also. And when you begin to seek someone to preach God's word, especially to work in a local work, you'll look at his wife also. Not long ago, someone told me about a certain preacher who had been asked to leave the work where he was. They went ahead and said, he is an excellent preacher. He is a sound preacher. He knows God's word. He's a hard worker. And I immediately asked, why is he leaving? And they said, his wife doesn't come to Bible study. And she'll come to worship and come in and sit down on the end of a seat. And after the worship service is over, she'll sit there on that end of that seat until the preacher gets through greeting the people. He comes by and gets her and they go home. There was an outstanding preacher who was unable to continue his work because he and his wife didn't share together spiritually. I admit to you, I have a little bit of difficulty understanding how a Christian and a non-Christian can really share together in every sense of the word as a husband and a wife. I believe God recognizes the marriage of a Christian and a non-Christian. But I believe both God and us, and we can recognize the difficulty that can be there. And not only in a case where one's a member of the church and one's not, in some instances where they're both members, but one is interested in really living a Christian life and the other one's just interested in hanging on for the ride. One's interested in working and the other one's interested in sitting. One is interested in giving liberally and one is not. And you take the points on and you see what I'm talking about. How can there be religious sharing? How can there be spiritual sharing? Real spiritual sharing in cases like that. The true sharing and the real wonderful relationship is when you have that husband and wife who dwell together physically, in knowledge, intellectually, encouraging one another emotionally, and praying to God for his help to help them to grow together spiritually and to grow toward heaven as the final home to be able to share with God in that eternity. There is your real picture of husband and wife sharing. That's the kind of families that we need today. Again, I would suggest there's not a one of us who has a perfect relationship or a perfect family, but every one of us ought to have that as the goal and be doing everything that we can to share with each other in our own family relationships. And when we have husbands and wives like that, and then children are brought into that setting where dad and mother share physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually, I don't believe there's a television personality or any other kind of personality anywhere that can tear down what the home and the family can be when patterned after God's will in that way. Husbands and wives sharing together. May God bless us to that end. And then may he help us also use that to understand that it pictures our relationship to Christ. We, the church, become the bride, and we can share with Christ. And he shares with us with all the needs and meeting all our needs that we have. Yesterday, we had a marriage in this building. This afternoon, the Lord willing, there will be another. Friday night, there will be another. I suggest to you this morning there need to be some. Because some of you in this audience need to be married to Christ this morning. You need to make your vows of commitment to him by confessing his name. Be buried with him in baptism for the remission of sins, and let the Lord perform the ceremony of adding you to Christ as a part of his bride. If you've already done that, and you're not really sharing with Christ by living for him in every way that you should, maybe you need to come and ask for some prayers and for some forgiveness. What a wonderful team the husband-wife is. What a wonderful team the Christ Church relationship describes. And they affect each other. One of the greatest things that any one of us in this audience this morning can do to really have that beautiful husband-wife sharing relationship is to be a Christian, a faithful Christian. If you're not, come as together we stand and sing.
Drawing near, entrance within demanding, whose is the voice I hear? Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark hours dreary, knocking again is he. Jesus, art thou not weary, waiting so long for me? Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart I hail.